Well, good evening. We're just about to finish the mirror. We might finish tonight. I'm not sure how much more there is to say about the last bit, which to describe Zazen, our relationship to Zazen, you could say, in very vivid metaphors. So I've been thinking about what to do next, and we've discussed this. We have a list, and I think I remember that we said we might do the Diamond Sutra after this, if my memory is correct. And that's too soon for me, because I spent a lot of time on the mirror, and I'd like to take a breather for a couple of Tuesdays. And my thought is that I think it might be helpful if we go over some of the details of our practice, of why we bow during the service, and where we're supposed to bow, what we're bowing to. I think it's not clear. There are a lot of things that are not clear like that. Just the sort of we do things in such a simple way, it's hardly anything. But it's nice to know what the hardly anything really is. So I thought we could do that. Also, about prostration, people often have very many questions about prostration and whether we should do it, and it's a very un-American kind of thing to do, so it's an interesting subject, actually. And chanting. Ellie and Claire have been working on working up the Mokugyo and the Sino-Japanese version of the Heart Sutra, which is what's mostly chanted in most Zen centers. So if you go to another Zen center, if you haven't heard it, it sounds very strange. But it's also extremely fine experience to let those sounds pass through your body. Kanji, Zaibo, Zatsu, Kyo, Jin, Hanya, Hara, Mita, Ji, Shoken, Goun, Kaiku, Doi, Saiku, Yakusha, Rishi, Shi. So it's saying Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva, when practicing deeply the Prajna Paramita, perceived that all five skandhas are empty and was saved from all suffering and distress, etc., etc. So it's a wonderful experience to let those sounds pass through your body. So I thought we would let Claire and Ellie sort of help us do this. Also, I thought it would be well to talk about Zazen a bit, just plain old Shikan Taza, as we, without the embellishment of a sutra or a dogen or anything, of just talking about the experience of Zazen itself. And also, I think it would be useful to think about how we're doing things and how we might do it another way. Koban always encouraged us. He said, write your own sutra. Write your own precepts. How would you like to do it? What does it mean to you? So in terms of our practice together, let's think about what we're doing and what could be done better, differently. And then the last thing is that Often, people in a Dharma talk will ask a question saying that they were embarrassed to ask the question because it's so simple-minded. And then they ask a profound question that everybody has been wondering about also. It's invariable. And it seems to me that everybody is carrying at least one question that they don't ask about even simple things that seem so immaterial, it doesn't really matter, who cares. But of course, if it's a question, you do care. And it helps to ask because it helps everybody, not just you, but everybody else. So I thought that would be something else to consider, to just explore your own mind and see what questions come up that you might like to expose to the air for the sake of us all. We all learn from the questions, including me. I learned so much from you guys. So the mirror, precious mirror, samadhi. I keep calling this the mirror, but it's really the samadhi. It's really the zazen. It's talking about. It's the mind, the precious mind mirror. So this piece that we've come to goes, ordinarily, outwardly, still, while inwardly moving, like a tethered colt, a trapped rat. The ancient sages pitied them and bestowed upon them the teachings. According to their delusions, they called black as white. When erroneous imaginations cease, the acquiescent mind realizes itself. If you want to conform to the ancient way, please observe the sages of former times. When about to fulfill the way of Buddhahood, one gazed at the tree for 10 eons, like a battle-scarred tiger, like a horse with shanks gone gray. Because there is the common, there are jewel pedestals and fine clothing. Because there is the startlingly different, there are house, cat, and cow. It's really, it amuses me every time I read it. It just seems so amazing. And that it's lasted this long. It's just incredible. So I think we've all had that experience of outwardly still while inwardly moving. I mean, that's the first complaint when people come to sit is, my mind won't stop. You know, I can sit completely still and not move, but my mind just keeps churning away. And then I have to say, it's okay. It's really fine. It will do that as long as you just sit for short periods of time, because that's what your brain is made to do. And it will quiet down when it feels safe and peaceful. So the best way is just to put yourself in a safe and peaceful place and then let your mind begin to rest a bit. So a tethered colt that's always tugging. And I feel that in my body often when I first begin to sit. You know, my body doesn't want to sit down and be still. It wants to jump up and take care of things, wash the dishes or something. Or a trapped rat that just keeps pushing at the cage, trying to get out of there. You can't say it's not happening because it is. And you can't try to make it go away because it won't as long as you keep trying to make it go away. The best way is simply acknowledge it. There it is. This is what's happening. And just be there with it. So the ancient sages were very, very kind and pitied the ones who were in this position where they had reached a basis and comprehended something, but still were in some state of agitation, and gave them the teachings. So this is great generosity being expressed. Dana Paramita being expressed. The best of generosity is sharing the teachings, not proselytizing and saying, oh, you've got to be a Buddhist. But if someone needs some kind of encouragement or has an insight that you recognize, you could completely support and confirm it. That's the best kind of teaching. It's not telling people something so much as confirming what they're coming to know. Deludedly, we call black white and white black. It's inevitable. It's very hard to tell the difference. Very hard to find the black one, the really black black and the really white white. It's very hard to identify the shadow when we're so wedded to brightness, wedded to consciousness and knowing and thinking. There is a deep shadow that goes with us everywhere we go. It's very hard to know unless we sit down and let the whole thing settle around us and become known. When erroneous imaginations cease, the acquiescent mind realizes itself. To acquiesce, to say yes. There's always this feeling that it's outside somewhere, that there's somewhere else to get, or something else to get. But the truth of it is that it's the mind itself saying yes, acquiescing. Accepting. It's looking in the precious mirror. You're not what it is. It is what you are. If you want to conform to the ancient way, please observe the sages of former times. When about to fulfill the way of Buddhahood, one gazed at the tree for 10 eons. This Buddha was called Mahabhijna Anabibhu. Mahabhijna Anabibhu, the Buddha of supreme penetration and surpassing wisdom. And he is known for his 10 eons of patience. Extreme patience. So it doesn't say we should also sit 10 eons. It just says we should observe that he did that. So that's kind of a relief, because I'm not sure we have 10 eons to do this. Maybe we do, but it's hard to say. Like a battle scarred, he observed that. Let's see. When about to fulfill the way of Buddhahood, one gazed at the tree for 10 eons, like a battle-scarred tiger, like a horse with shanks gone gray. So tigers are supposed to... Oh, this is a different translation, so it's... It makes perfect sense like this. And a horse, they say, who doesn't care whether his left hind leg is a different color, which makes more sense than this translation. It just doesn't, it's a creature that doesn't matter at all what happens. You just put up with it. If you're all beat up or you look kind of funny or you have a bad hair day or something, it's just all the same. It's not important at all. You just keep sitting and letting all those things not go away, but just not be have the same kind of intense importance that we put on so many things. Because there is the common, there are jewel pedestals, fine clothing. Because there is the startlingly different, there are house, cat, and cow. This is a very funny way of saying that ordinary things define fancy things, and fancy things define ordinary things. It's like war defines peace, and peace defines war. You can't have one without the other. War is the absence of peace, and peace is the absence of war. Ordinary is the absence of fancy. Fancy is the absence of ordinary. So, because there is this startlingly different, there are these completely homely house, cat, and cow. So, they create each other. And that's important information, because if we don't know that, we think there's a real difference when they belong to each other, when it's all of a piece. So it goes on, Yi, with his archer skill, could hit a target at 100 paces. But when the arrow points meet head on, what has this to do with the power of skill? When the wooden man begins to sing, the stone woman gets up dancing. It's not within reach of feeling or discrimination. How could it admit of consideration in thought? Ministers serve their lords. Children obey their parents. Not obeying is not filial, and not serving is no help. Practice secretly, working within, like a fool, like an idiot. Just continue in this way. Is called the host within the host. So Yi, Bowman Yi, was a famous bowman from not just ancient times, but mythical times, who shot and destroyed 9 out of 10 suns. Apparently the Earth had 10 suns at one point, and Bomani just kept shooting at them until there was just one left. So he was known as the most skillful archer that ever lived. But when the arrow points meet head on, when two arrow points meet, one from each direction, what has this to do with the power of skill? So this is talking about when mind to mind meet, or when we meet ourself, or when we meet the wall, or the grass, or our friend. Then true meeting doesn't take skill at all. It takes that acquiescence and surrender to just be there. It's the same as the ordinary and the fancy. It's one thing. Always together. It just seems different. When the wooden man begins to sing and the stone woman gets up dancing, it's not within reach of feeling or discrimination. How could it admit of consideration in thought? So feeling, discriminating, thinking, all of the ways that we try to figure out what the world is and what it's all about, really doesn't apply in Zazen or in a dharmic life. Our life is more about meeting, about how we perceive, freely and openly perceive what's truly in front of us. Therefore, a wooden man, a stone woman, a wooden man who's not laying down his observations and judgments, a stone woman who is not demeaning or judging, but dancing, singing, there's joy in that kind of straight, clear perception that's not loaded up with a lot of discrimination. Ministers serve their lords, children obey their parents. This is a very Chinese thing to talk about, the whole notion of filial piety, where everything circles around the family, and the paterfamilia, the dad, the big dad, is the one who must be completely respected and honored in all ways, and the parents, both parents, but the dad especially. So that metaphor is being used in terms of our relationship to Zazen and to our true nature, that we too can be completely respectful, that we are the child of Buddha, you could say, or we're the minister serving the earl of something, that we take the position of, as what did they say, obedience. And then we have to ask, obedient to what? You could say conscience, maybe, but it's more than that. It's not just what we've been conditioned to think is right and wrong. It's more what our deepest sense of our life and ourself, is always, there's always a direction. And there's always support and help. And to be obedient to that is probably the best advice. And that's how this ends. Mel Weitzman said, always obey big mind. It sounds easy, but it's hard to know big mind if we're zipping around the way we do. There's a quote from Hong Zhi that's sort of like this, who says, directly attain the way of Lord and Minister in cooperation. Cooperate with yourself. And the spirit energy of parent and child in harmony. Up in the lapis lazuli palace, the jade woman rolls her head. In front of the bright moon hall, the stone man rubs his hands. So practice secretly, working within, like a fool, like an idiot. Just to continue in this way is called the host within the host. So that host within the host is enlightenment. Not at all what people think. Fool and idiot? Oh, no way. Enlightenment is something fabulous and strong and powerful and makes me the best one in the whole wide world. No, not really. It doesn't work like that. So that's the whole thing. And there must be some questions. Donna Lynn?
Came up for me was in checking in with you, the obedience almost feels like having a surrender or a faith.
Yes.
Not something so like obedient, like a soldier or obedient, hard with it.
Yes, yes, you're not going around like this.
Yeah. So it's more than, again, talking about when saying, be obedient to big mind is similar to saying having confidence and having faith.
Yes.
In our sense.
Yes, in our ability to know what the right thing is. And the courage, and trusting that we have the courage to do what needs to be done. So it takes practice to try it out and see if it's true. Because we don't think it's true. Often we don't think, oh, I can't do that, and it's, besides, it wouldn't work, and I might get in trouble, or it might hurt in some way. So the only way to find out is to do it. Just do what is truly true obedience. Yeah, thank you. which might look strange to other people.
Well, faith also in Western. Well, then I was thinking then, is that like an idiot too? The blind faith, but it's not really, but maybe so.
No, it's more like trust.
Yeah.
And it is blind in a way. We're always walking in the dark. We really don't know where we're going. So in that sense, it is.
Okay, yeah,
but it's not a belief.
Right.
It's an understanding that we test and see if it works and if it. It's a kind of understanding that we can cultivate. Yeah.
Well, you know, we have MapQuest available. Just trust it, right?
Yeah. I wish. There are no maps. Frit?
Actually, I found that app, because MapQuest always crashes in the browsers. And I was going to say, what are we supposed to conclude, or like you said, test it? You know, we have experience, but then we test it. But what are you supposed to conclude after you test it? Like, what if it turns out disastrously? But it maybe was the right thing, but, or maybe it wasn't. I don't know, how do you...
What you're testing is your ability to do what's right. And if you survive something that's a total disaster, then you know that it didn't work and that you're okay. In fact, you're much more okay than if you get all upset because you think you're not right. It's not about your being right or wrong in the sense that we think if we fail at something that there's something wrong with us. If we're doing the very best we can with the most insight that we have, then we just accept it when things go wrong. And accept ourselves, trust ourselves, even though we're not right every single time. It may in the long run be right. No, like the man who, how is it? He lost his horse and his son broke his leg and he felt so bad. And I've forgotten how that goes, but yeah. So we don't know. We really don't know.
Just reflecting on this last part this afternoon. So the host within the host always kind of trips me up. I went back to the five, the thunderbolt thing. There it was, you know, host within a host, the great awakening and enlightenment.
Yes.
Help me with that image, though, the host. Is this the mirror? I mean, showing off, reflecting back?
It's the Dharmakaya.
The body of
the Buddha. The body of all. Which is expressed as Sambhogakaya. And is lived as Nirmanakaya. So all those three concepts of kaya, kaya means body. So Dharmakaya is the whole, the all.
This is the big circle you drew for me.
Yeah. Sometimes they say it's the sun and the Sambhogakaya. It's the life-giving force, the thing that lights everything up and creates everything. and Sambhogakaya are the rays of the sun that then reach each one of us and empower and enliven us. And then Nirmanakaya is we as practicers, practicing Buddhas, are Nirmanakaya. So it's like that schematic of the ranks. It's very abstract, but you can feel it. So the host and guest are host and guest. First the guest is on top and then the host is underneath. Then the host is on top and the guest is underneath. And then the host goes inside the guest, the little black dot and the big white one. And then the big white one is complete, it's the complete host. The guest, I think, the guest is the white one, and then the black one is the host in host. So it's...
Yeah, I'm trying to
think. Yeah, you can't think it. It's just about how Zazen moves around. It never stays the same. It's like our own real moon. It's sometimes full and shining, and sometimes it doesn't seem to be there at all. And yet it's always ongoing. It's always true and real. So it's a very ancient way of trying to describe how even though it's various and changing all the time, it's always us. Always our practice. Well, that's it.